Mitchell's Front Page on 94.7 The Pulse.
And I'm now very pleased to welcome to the broadcast position James Taylor, senior journalist from the Surf Coast Times. How are you, James?
Good morning, Mitchell. Change of location today, I see.
Absolutely. What do you think of the new spot?
Yeah, this is great. Nice and spacious, nice and airy. I think the last time I was down here was with a crowd of a couple of hundred people when the ABC had their little pre-election.
I was just going to say a certain other broadcaster, which we can't name, but
I'm sure if you're down here in 4 years' time, there will be just as much interest in your pre-election.
And I remember that broadcast where it was such an exciting event with the different candidates debating, and I listened to it. And now when you look at what's happening in Canberra today, have you heard any news about this Corey Bernardi
situation? Yes, I think the latest news out of Canberra is that Corey Bernardi will be making a statement at 12:30.
Right.
And the statement will almost certainly be, I'm deciding to leave the Liberals and take my bat and my ball and set up my own party. With however many other people decide to join him. I'm not sure how many people that might be. He might be all on his own there for a while. But Corey has been threatening to leave the Liberals for months, if not years. And things apparently came to a head over the weekend. And he's decided, well, I'm not sure if I can stay in the Liberal tent anymore. I'd rather set up my own tent.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see what happens from here, as you say. And this was being discussed on Q&A last night. Tony Jones said, well, what happens if he brings George Christensen with him? Then they lose that one seat majority and they go into minority government, don't they?
He is the name that keeps getting thrown up. If anyone's going to leave, it's going to be George Christensen, because he's a national and he's seen as further to the right than a lot of the other Liberal politicians in the lower house. But really, I think it's far too early to tell with these things. I mean, if these things, when they happen, they happen very quickly, as has been the case today. Corey will go, and unfortunately, I'm not sure if we should still call him Prime Minister Malcolm Turnbull, despite the fact that Sean Spicer, the US Press Secretary, can't seem to get it right. He is still our Prime Minister, and he's still called Malcolm Turnbull, not Mr. Trumbull or anything else.
I don't understand why the US people seem to struggle so much with our names. I remember when Julia Gillard was Prime Minister, and it was Prime Minister Gillard.
Yeah, I'm not sure if it's a calculated insult or that there's something about the Australian pronunciation that they struggle with, but yeah. It's those of us that sort of watch communications for a living look at this stuff and we facepalm and go, how could you possibly get that wrong? This is your job.
Exactly. Now, I was looking at the front cover of a certain rival publication from Sydney, which we can't name, the Daily Telegraph.
Yes. And, hopefully there aren't too many readers of the Daily Telegraph at Torquay. I would hope everyone here is reading the Surf Coast Times first and the Daily Telegraph about maybe 10th or 11th.
Yeah, I think that's probably about right. But it had a picture of Corey Bernardi. The illustration made him out as a rat.
Yes.
You think you are a rat if you get elected to the Senate as a Liberal Party person, then just 6 months later into a six-year term, you then switch parties?
Well, that's the argument coming out of the Liberals. I've had various Liberals, especially Christopher Pine, has come out with some very strong words.
And also Christopher Pine's also in South Australia.
That's right.
He's obviously got some involvement with his pre-selection.
From what I understand, South Australian federal politics is very dark and very murky business. I'm not sure how much of that has to do with Nick Xenophon and how much of it has to do with maybe the fact that they just really don't like each other in South Australia.
Yeah.
And it gets especially frosty over there. But that's a Daily Telegraph, I guess, coming to the forefront again with their magical Photoshop people. One of their more notorious examples was putting Stephen Conroy on the same page as Hitler and Chairman Mao.
I remember that. Yeah.
Yeah, it was one of those things.
Do you have good Photoshop people at the Surf Coast Times?
I'm sure we have excellent Photoshop people at the Surf Coast Times, but we never do something like that. We've got better uses for our front pages.
And you've got standards of journalistic
excellence. Yeah, we have ethics, and we have, I think, slightly better news sense than that, too.
So turning to some local news, I saw Sarah Henderson talking about issues along the Great Ocean Road, saying the infrastructure was poor. She went pretty extreme in terms of saying people were, I think, defecating into the greenery as they were driving past, which I think is quite shocking.
Yeah, I mean, this has been a sort of an ongoing issue along the Great Ocean Road in general. I mean, I know it's one of the common concerns that gets thrown up at Bell's Beach about the surface just going to the toilet in the bushes as opposed to going to the toilet block. But the idea of that infrastructure along the Great Ocean Road is not a new one. It's one that's been sort of an issue for years, especially in places like the 12 Apostles. I mean, I think that the stat when it came out was something along the lines of the average visitor to the 12 Apostles stays there for 5 minutes and spends 18 cents or something. So some sort of extraordinarily low figure based on the fact that it's one of the most recognisable Australian tourism icons there is, and it's pulling an increasingly large share of the Chinese tourism market. But in terms of what you get once you get to the 12 Apostles and a little bit further down the road, Port Campbell, but what you get once you're there and what you can spend your money on, there's really not much there. So I guess Sarah is tapping into that wider discussion about what really needs to be put in terms of car parking and toilets and overtaking lanes. There's always going to be challenges on the Great Ocean Road because it was built as a single lane highway, and it's always going to be that way, and it's built on limestone cliffs, and so there's always going to be the threat of landslides. It's very, very twisty, very turny, very lots of hills, both up and down. So it'll be interesting to see what comes out of this summit that she's convening, I think, later this month, to see what sort of gets thrown up as the, say, the half a dozen critical things that need to be done. I understand that she mentioned the Great Ocean Road Arch at Fairhaven as one that really needed spot, really needs something to done. I know that's becoming a traffic hazard in its own right, just because of the sheer number of people that want to get selfies with the sign in the background. So I can see why they want to put toilets there.
We did the Great Ocean Road. We just drove the Apollo Bay to Torquay stretch, and then back to Geelong, and that was fantastic. But it's a good thing to do on a weekend. But it put into perspective, you know, those people that we talk about all the time that go down to the 12 Apostles and then back to Melbourne all in one day.
That's right.
A lot of driving on very challenging road. Mm-hmm. But you're exactly right about that arch. We drove under the arch. There was this massive tour bus in front of it, and what did it do? It turned straight into the car park so everyone could get out and take their selfie. And incidentally, when we were driving along, there was someone with a big selfie stick holding that out. I thought selfie sticks went out of fashion in 2011.
Not yet, I think. I think the cool and hip people have probably moved on to using drones to take their selfies.
That's right.
And shooting amazing footage and essentially anywhere you like, but I think the selfie stick is still hanging around there somewhere.
Yeah, for sure. So it'll be an interesting conversation, but you think this summit has merits? I don't want to say the word political stunt, but...
Yeah, I wouldn't use the word political stunt either, but if it's used as a forum to identify the really critical bits of infrastructure that need to be put in and need to be put in now. And in terms of the politics, the Liberals are more than happy to tout the fact they've put $50 million into the Great Ocean Road over the past two cycles of federal government. So if some of that money can be diverted immediately towards putting those things in, then I'm all for it personally.
One of the other things we noticed driving around was it seemed like they'd put up more sort of retaining walls or things to avoid the landslides. So some progress has been made in that area.
Yeah, I think VicRoads are probably very, very happy that they've got this $50 million and they can look at their schedule of works and all the things that weren't necessarily on the dream list, but things that this is stuff that we really like to do and really like to do sooner rather than later. And now they've got this huge transfer money from both the state and federal governments, it should be said, and so they can get on with it.
Now, there's been some joint winners of the Citizen of the Year award.
Yeah, that's a great turnout, I think, especially and especially relevant given recent movements in terms of talking about fracking and renewable energy and energy security more generally. Alison Marchant was one of the winners, based in Moriac, I think.
We've had her on several times.
There you go, a friend of the program. She was one of the winners, and also the other winner was Pete Spring from Lawn. Now, Pete Spring is one of those guys who has an involvement in probably every single community group that Lawn has, and probably some of you haven't. So he's been doing tons of work for heaps of years, so very good that the Shire decided that, well, we really can't split these two, so we'll give them both award.
And tell us about what you think of this Paint the Town Purple initiative, which is what we're actually down here for.
Yeah, I think it's fantastic. I mean, I've taken part in a Relay for Life myself at my first job at the Bendigo Advertiser. And that was amazingly good fun, if not a very long night, and my feet were very sore by the end of it. But in terms of brightening up the town, or actually making the town more purple, which I guess is the idea, it looks fantastic, and hopefully everyone jumps on board with it.
And Relay for Life itself is coming up in about 4 weeks'
time. That's right, as I understand, in early March.
Very good. Anything else in the news front to leave us with?
Yeah, the big one and one that I went to a media briefing yesterday was the latest update on housing in Spring Creek. The Spring Creek Precinct Structure Plan has come back to the Surf Coast Shire, and to put it mildly, the Independent Planning Panel have wrapped the Shire over the knuckles for their handling of the process. Let me read you just one paragraph. The one unifying factor for both the pro-development community and anti-development community has been a level of dissatisfaction with this process. That's a process in terms of the Shire convening its community panel to sort of get views from community and landholders in terms of what they would find acceptable and what they wouldn't. The panel found this has resulted in a disjointed PSP and one that requires substantial changes prior to being approved. Now, the Shire has come out on the front foot and said, well, they haven't asked us to abandon it. They've asked us to change a few things, and there's always going to be some pushback, and no one's ever really going to be happy. But when you read through the document, there's a few things the Shire have tried to do that the panel has nicked straight away. For the one thing that comes to mind straight away was the idea that the hard edge of that development, 1 kilometre west of Duffield's Road, would be the western growth boundary for Torquay. The panel has essentially ruled that out and said, well, no, that's not going to happen. I'm quoting again, growth to the west should not be discarded, and proper growth planning should not discount its possibility at this stage. So I think the Surf Coast Shire was very keen to say, okay, we'll give you your 1 kilometre of housing in Spring Creek, but that's going to be it. But the planning panel said, actually, no, you can't do that. It may well be further growth down the valley in the future. Now, this is almost certainly going to get some fairly large pushback from the community.
Absolutely.
The council, as I understand, is not going to consider it until late next month, because it's probably a lot of work for the Shire's planning officers to digest all of this and make some recommendations to council for them to get it out at this month's meeting, which is only in a couple of weeks. So give them 6 weeks or so. And I'm tipping it's going to be a very crowded council meeting when this one comes on the agenda.
Well, that'll be very, very interesting indeed. Well, James, thank you very much for being part of the broadcast. We had you on last week, and this is sort of an extra slot for you, so we will be paying you overtime for today.
Thank you very much.
And then we'll see you next week as well.
Or thanks,
maybe
Mitchell.
On the phone. Good on you. James Taylor there from the Surf Coast Times newspaper. Fantastic publication. He's their senior journalist. We'll go to a break, and then after the break, we'll be speaking to Gail Birchall, who is a team member and participant in the Relay for Life. And also we'll be catching up with someone else involved in this entire initiative, Nick Kiersey from Hayden Real Estate on the Surf Coast. This is 94.7 The Pulse, live in Torquay.
Mitchell's Front Page with Mitchell Dye. Mondays and Tuesdays from 9 till 11 on 94.7 The Pulse.